Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you for listening to this Last Blast podcast by The Intercooler. Now, before we get started, I just want to take a moment to thank Footman James for sponsoring Last Blast. As you know, at The Intercooler, we only partner with like-minded organisations, with companies that we think really understand what it means to be a car enthusiast. Footman James fit into that perfectly. I know this because when talking to them before making this recording, they said to me, "Please don't talk about car insurance," which I think says a lot. So instead, I'm just going to give you a couple of reasons why Footman James is different to other car insurance companies. Coffee and chrome, for one thing. That's Footman James' regular car meet. It's free to attend once you're registered. It's where hundreds, if not a thousand, car enthusiasts get together with their classics to enjoy and share their passion for cars. Footman James also publishes its indicator report. It's a thorough analysis and a detailed report into the state of classic car ownership in this country. The point is to promote and safeguard the future of classic cars in the UK. So there you go, two good reasons why Footman James is different to other car insurance companies. So thank you, Footman James. Go and visit footmanjames.co.uk. You're listening to the Last Blast podcast by The Intercooler. Hi everyone, Dan Prosser here with a 15-minute extract from the final, the sixth and final episode of season one of Last Blast. In this week's Last Blast, I talked to car designer Ian Callum. This is the first one that I've done. My colleague Andrew Frankel has done the other Last Blast podcast this series. And as you may well know, Ian Callum, I mean, apart from being the perfect kind of guest for Last Blast, given his car design CV, his portfolio, his experience, everything he has to say about car design. He's also a TI contributor. He writes for us. So, I mean, he is the ideal Last Blast podcast guest. And having done the interview myself, I can tell you that he's really honest and open and chatty and interesting about car design. And he talks about the highlights of his career, things like the Aston Martin DB7 and several of the other Aston Martins he designed, also his work at Jaguar. And even before that, when he was working at Ford, he's just a great guy and a true enthusiast. You'll get that impression right away when he tells you what his first company car was at Ford when he was just out of college. The full thing is an hour long. If you want to listen to the full thing, head over to the Intercooler app or the Intercooler website, the-intercooler.com. You will need to be a TI subscriber. But for now, here's a 15-minute extract from our Last Blast podcast with Ian Callum. Were you brought into Jaguar with a remit to modernise the appearance of the cars?
No, I wasn't. I'd lived with Jaguar in my younger years, understanding XJs and Mark IIs and E-types. I knew their place in the car world at that point. And yes, they were British, but also they were very modern. The XJ in 68 was an incredibly modern car, and it drove like a modern car. And I had to get that back into that focus that Jaguars are not about the past. They're actually about the future. They're about being brave. They're about being different. But they're also about being beautiful and performance cars. And I had a very clear remit in my own mind, so I was quite bullish about it. I got into trouble.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, perhaps it wasn't the remit that was handed down to you, but you clearly wanted to evolve Jaguar's design language at that time. The XK and the XJ in particular, a very modern piece of design. And do you just have to accept that you're going to be met with resistance and charge through anyway?
Well, it was something after working in TWR where I was, you know, hidden away, I suddenly found myself in the front line and I had to learn how to speak. I had to learn how to present, you know, and this is something that was very, very difficult for me. But also what I did learn was to explain why I wanted to do certain things. Designers always can be a little bit ethereal. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, come on, give us a break. Just tell it as it is. Stop giving us all this sort of, you know, flowery stuff. And so I'm very down to earth in that respect. But what I did learn to do was to explain to my management why certain things have to be, in my mind, the way they are, and give them good reason for and understanding it. And that was that led me a long way, actually. If you turn around, I remember saying to Mark Fields once, you know, I said, why? We're looking at XK. And he said, why is that line? I said, it's intuitive. And he blew me apart, you know, in front of everybody, as these execs can do. And he said, don't get me, intuitive. I don't understand intuitive. So I went home with my tail between my legs, feeling very hurt. And I thought, what do I do now? So just learn to explain, Ian. So I went through various phases at Jaguar like that. Learn to speak, learn to explain, learn to play with the politics, learn to keep the boss happy without doing what he wants, you know, do what you want. It's just a game that you learn. And it's like that in many things in life.
And is it fair to say then that given all those lessons learned, you produce some of your life's best work during that Jaguar era, F-Type, I-Pace?
I-Pace, yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. But part of it was, though, I surrounded myself with a great team of people, you know, and I became a director rather than a designer. I'd still sketch every day, and designers come and say, look, I want something like this or like that. And so I still had a vision. I never let go of the vision in my own mind, but I just had to then translate that through the team so that I directed them rather than, and of course, a lot of them were very talented, and they came with me. So that's part of it. Yeah, so if you include my team, yeah, I think some of the best stuff, absolutely. Right, even right to the very last one, which you will never see.
Oh, but tell me then about the CX-75, which for a while looked like it may well make production as a very exclusive hypercar, and sadly never did.
It was celebrating the XJR-50, the XJ-13. XJR-13, was it? XJ-13? The sports car. And we wanted to do something which really celebrated the 75 years of Jaguar. Of course, designers default to that 60s race car. And so Julian and I put the team together to come up with something that was very pure. And to me, just state the obvious. Just do something beautiful. Don't try and be clever. Don't try and be quirky. Don't put funny surfaces on it. You know, don't put too many lines in. Of course, part of my job at this point was I'm an editor. You know, I'm editing things all the time. Take that off, and honing it to a sense of purity. And the 675 was a perfect example of that. And we did it within design. There were no outside constraints. There were no marketing constraints, engineering constraints. And it met with such an enormous sense of approval at the Paris show when we launched it. You know, Ralph felt this need to investigate building it for real, because he realized, unfortunately it didn't prevail, but, you know, what that could do for the brand as a car would be enormous, you know, people talk about Jaguar, they think of CX-75, you know, being bigger and better than any Ferrari or Aston or anything. Sadly, it got halfway through its development. And then for a number of reasons, part was lack of confidence and volume, and part was the money was costing. And, you know, it was shelved. Built five cars and that was it. Very sad. That was a sadness I felt because, why? Because it wasn't a personal thing. It wasn't, oh, they've taken my baby away from me or anything like that. It was what it would have done for the brand. It would have lifted it up so high.
Sure.
You know, and that was an opportunity lost.
So you mentioned that you just wanted to design something beautiful. And my heart sings when I hear a car designer say that, because I have a theory that there are other car designers out there working these days who have decided that beauty is not enough anymore and they have to be controversial or challenging. Do you see any of this, or have I got that wrong?
No, I see it all the time. It's frustrating. You know, but I know the problems that they're facing. They've got a set of metrics they have to deal with. You know, and the silhouette of that car they're designing is set up by a whole bunch of people who are measuring other cars, who are saying this is where the height is going to be, where the tail's going to be, this is the size of the lamps, this is blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on. And what we used to do, what Julian and I used to do at Jaguar, we'd challenge those metrics, you know. And, of course, I'd tease some of the guys that come in and say, well, your roof is 5 millimeters too low. I say, yeah, but I've got the clay model. That was always a little frustrating. So we have to go through these moments of negotiation. And that's, you know, I said, Jaguar, you have to remember, Jaguar was all about proportion. And of course, these other brands have got the luxury of doing their sedan, which can be very, and then they do the coupe version as well. We didn't have that luxury. But all the coupes that these guys are now doing is what Jaguar would do in its normal state. But a lot of people didn't agree with that. But what I see, sorry, I'm digressing, but what I see now is I think they're stuck with a set of givens, and all they've got left is stuff in between. And they kind of overplay it.
Yeah.
Because they've got a clay model. And to my view, somebody's not editing this stuff properly. You know, you let a 25-year-old free in a clay model and he'll have a lot of fun with it, like a sandpit. At some point, you've got to smooth it out, you know, you've got to clean it up, you've got to take stuff off. I don't mean that, you know, a lot of very good 25-year-olds, better than I am, but it's just about discipline.
Sure.
And, you know, I look back at it sometimes and I think, well, maybe I'm just old-fashioned, you know, I'm just not getting it. And I accept that as part of the problem.
So let's have your sixth and final car then.
Well, we've touched the I-Pace.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was a moment the future started, and the opportunity with it was something that I grabbed with two hands and said, right, we're going to. And do you know what was nice about it? Nobody was looking. This was something the company decided it had to do, had to embark on this electric car journey. And, you know, people say, oh, Jaguar's going to be electric. No, it was decided then that Jaguar would be electric. And then we're talking about 7 or 8 years ago now. You know, we're going to, when we did CX-75, Jaguar decided, well, perhaps our future is electric. At least hybrid. So it's nothing new, really. But the I-Pace is an opportunity to take a hold of the package and design it as a designer's car and not as a result of all these metrics coming in to say, what? Of course there are constraints, there are crash requirements and all these good things. But the fact nobody was really looking, we have to do this car, so just go and get on with it. And I decided to just completely turn it on its head as much as I could. And cab forward. I always dreamt of doing a cab forward mid-engine saloon car. Wow. You can't do that because of pedestrian. There's occupants where the engine would be, so it doesn't really work, does it? But that's what was in my mind, you know, something that was a bit more exotic than just a long bonnet and a cabin at the back of it. And we got away with it. And I see them today. I still get a buzz out of them. I still think they look pretty cool.
They do. It's like the waistline above, it's like a coupe, and below, it's like an SUV of some kind.
I was challenged with the aero. I had a square back, which is what good for aero, a tall back. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, that's not going to be like a Jag if you do that. No, we'll just, it will become what it is, you know, and vice versa. Don't worry about it. Just make it a beautiful square back and it'll work. Just make sure the lines are exaggerated, you know, let's let's put lots of shape into it and movement. And it's really like an F-type back to front, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was the opportunity that electric cars brought. And I had two or three of them, and I love driving them. They're great fun to drive.
Are the constraints fewer with an electric car?
I think they can be.
Yeah.
But now more and more people getting involved with them, the constraints are starting to build up, you know. And, right, of course, the cash requirements are not going to get any easier. So the idea of shorter bonnets may be a little difficult. But yeah, fundamentally, if you think all your mechanics are buried between the wheels, almost at not going to say ground level, but pretty low down, there's nothing above that. And everything's joined by wires, not drive shafts and, yeah, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, there has to be a lot more freedom, definitely. It's a problem for sports cars because you're sitting on a, in most cases, you're sitting on a skateboard, which takes up height.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll find ways around that. We'll put the batteries somewhere else.
You talk with a lot of fondness for some of the work you were able to do at Jaguar. But was it ultimately a relief in some way to leave in 2019?
Yeah, it was. I think my last year there was quite difficult for me personally. The companies, Jaguar and Land Rover, weren't doing so well. Tensions were building. The culture was getting a little bit more difficult. And I'd be honest with you, I'd run out of steam. Mm. You know, you spend, you know, it's a marathon, but it's a marathon at sprint pace. And you kind of run out of energy and steam, and you think, well, and I just thought to myself, I've done what I wanted to do. I actually got to XJ, which was the next
sure, one,
sadly never see, but you know, I was pleased with my lot. Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was time to move on. And also recognize the fact that I was probably getting a little bit behind the curve on some of my thoughts and ideas.
Wow. Interesting. So we'll never see it, but what can you tell me about the XJ that never was?
Well, it was a big car. It was bigger than two. It was sitting, the size of it sat between the previous long and short wheelbases. So we had one model rather than two. It had a lot more room inside it than today's car, which is something that the management almost demanded. One of the sad things about the marketing element of cars is they'll tell you why a car doesn't sell. They'll never really get into why it does sell. You know, they'll say, well, we can't sell the XJ in great numbers because the headroom's too small. Yeah, but you sell it in great numbers because it looks good. Oh, well, we don't have much evidence of that. Well, ask, you know, anyway, I won't go into that one. So it was bigger, it was taller, it was a skateboard platform, it was all electric. It was quite a formidable looking car, actually. Porsche Taycan, bigger, sense of form and shape. Yeah.
Sure. So you left Jaguar behind, and these days it's Callum, your own automotive and product design consultancy.
And must be mad.
Tell me about that. I mean, does it allow you to really flex your creative muscles? It must be in a totally different environment to Jaguar.
Yeah, I want to get back to my TWR days where we're small people and we were brave enough to go and do things. Of course, we have to rely on clients. So you are bound by what other people want. We did the Vanquish, as a study, and really as a calling card to get us going. We got a bit of sponsorship behind that. And we're building cars now. There's been a few issues on some of the politics and also some of the supply, but we're building cars now. But I want to get on to the next level. So I'd like to do more cars. We've done a lot of products, some of which you can find on the website and furniture. And we've even done a bottle of whiskey, which has been a bit of fun. So a fairly eclectic mix of products. And that's something I want to get back to because that does get the grey cells moving again. You know, you think laterally rather than just the car world. And so, but I'm keen to get back into doing more cars again if we can find. And we got one or two things in planned, but find the right clients and customers and we'll get on with it.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.